21, wanna have my own gun. Look at all the body bags lying in the hot sun. Heard about the enemy, now I wanna get me some. See the choppers in the air, maybe get a little scared. Here we go, marching off to war. Ain't it the greatest thing you ever saw? Smithereens.
Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts off with, does science refute God? Is belief in God rational? Or has science shown the existence of God to be so unlikely as to make belief irrational? Two physicists, a skeptic, and a scholar try to answer those questions. And then after that, Scott Horton interviews the other Scott Horton. They discuss the European Court Human Rights condemnation of Bush-era CIA torture practices within the rendition program, and they also talk about the U.S. justice system's failure to make federal government officials accountable for crimes.
Isaac Newton invented calculus, and he believed in God. Max Planck was the father of quantum physics, also a believer. Copernicus, the solar system, and Galileo, and Francis Bacon, and Pascal, they all believed. Today, 3 out of every 5 scientists, knowing what they know, say that they can't really buy into the concept of God. Science refutes God, they would say. Really? It sounds like the makings of a great debate, so let's get on to it. Yes or no to this statement, science refutes God. A debate from Intelligence Squared US. I'm John Donvan. We have 4 superbly qualified debaters who will be arguing for and against that motion, science refutes God. Our debate goes in 3 rounds, and then the audience votes to choose a winner, and only one side wins. And welcome first to argue in support of the motion, Lawrence Krauss. You are a theoretical physicist. Your research interests have included particle physics, dark matter, neutrino astrophysics, which is kind of easy stuff for all of us. You also like to push buttons, and you wrote a book called Forget Jesus, The Stars Died So That You Could Be Here Today, which doesn't sound very polite.
Do you think that's provocative?
Slightly, yeah.
Well, I think provoking people and ridicule and satire is incredibly important in the world today. It's nothing should be above ridicule because it gets people to think, and least of all, religion.
And your partner is?
Michael Shermer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Shermer. Michael, you are the founder of Skeptic Magazine and the Skeptic Society. You were not always skeptical on this issue. You, as a teenager, you were a born-again Christian, and then you switched to the other team. You're what my eighth-grade nun would call a very brazen and naughty boy.
Well, I'd be happy to talk to her about it. But
She's passed on, which I think would go to the other side.
Yeah. I was a born-again evangelical. I went knocking on door-to-doors to tell people about Jesus. And then later, when I became a born-again atheist, I went back to those same houses and knocked on their doors, and I was wrong.
All right. Our motion is Science Refutes God. We have two debaters arguing against this motion. I'd like to introduce the first, ladies and gentlemen, Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, you're a best-selling author and the director of 2016 Obama's America. You have debated this issue a number of times, arguing against atheists a lot. And a lot of times they say that science refutes God, but you came out with a book called God Forsaken. In a way, you turn this argument on its head. How?
Well, I think science can be a tool to help us understand God. And so far from science refuting God, I see science as a wonderful instrument for helping us learn about the world and thus learning about its creator.
And your partner is?
My partner is Ian Hutchinson.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Hutchinson. Ian Hutchinson, you are a professor of nuclear science and engineering at MIT. Your contributions to science include the first observations of polarized tokamak electron cyclotron radiation and development of diagnostics and thermal and non-thermal electronic distributions based on it. So you're that guy? What are you doing here?
Well, I guess that is the question, isn't it? But more seriously, I'm a scientist, and I'm also a Christian. I think both are very important parts of the way that we understand the world, and I think that's why this debate is so important.
All right. So on to round one, opening statements from each debater in turn. Our motion is Science Refutes God, and here to debate first, in support of this motion, Lawrence Krauss. He is the director of the Origins Project and professor of physics at the School of Earth and Space Exploration at Arizona State University. Ladies and gentlemen, Lawrence Krauss.
I first want to begin by clarifying the nature of the motion, because the motion isn't science disproves God, it's science refutes God. And that's very important, because you can't disprove a notion that's basically vague and unfalsifiable. There's no way to disprove the notion that God didn't create all of us 15 seconds ago with the memories of the amusing comments we heard before that. There's no way we can disprove that. But we can ask, is it rational to expect that that's likely? And tonight I want to emphasize that 500 years of science have demonstrated that God, that vague notion, is not likely. It's irrational to believe in God. Now, my own scientific field is cosmology, and that's the study of the origin and evolution of the universe as a whole. And it's where science and religion sort of confront each other. And creation myths have abounded throughout human history, and science confronts those creation myths. But I want to point out that our opponents, I'm pretty sure, are going to argue first that one aspect of science that supports, perhaps, the belief in God is this notion that the universe is apparently fine-tuned for life. I hear that a lot. And because it was fine-tuned so life could exist, that is a remarkable and, in fact, cosmic misunderstanding. Because it's the same kind of misunderstanding that led people to believe in special creation for life on Earth before Darwin. It looked like everything was designed for the environment in which it lived. But what Darwin showed us was that a simple proposition, namely that there's genetic variation among a population combined with natural selection, meant that you didn't need supernatural shenanigans. That, in fact, all the diversity of life on Earth could arise from a single life form by natural law. And he didn't know, what he showed was it was plausible based on the evidence. He didn't know about DNA, he didn't know about details of genetic replication, but he showed it was plausible. Now, my opponents, I suspect, will argue the universe is equally fine-tuned for life, and they, in fact, they will point out that certain fundamental parameters in nature, if they were different, we couldn't exist. This, too, is an illusion. And, in fact, perhaps the biggest fine-tuning problem in my own field of cosmology, something I'm, in fact, very proud to have proposed, in a sense, is that the energy of empty space is not zero. The weirdest thing you can imagine, that empty space weighs something. But, remarkably, the energy of empty space is 120 orders of magnitude smaller than we would naively predict. We all thought it was zero when I was a graduate student, because that was a natural value. If it was zero, the universe would be a better place. In fact, you can show the value that it has now makes the universe the worst of all possible universes to live in for the future of life. So much for a universe created for us. Now, once Darwin had removed the apparent need for God in evolution of life, the last bastion for God was the creation of the universe. how you can get something from nothing. And what we're in a remarkable situation of being in is precisely the same situation that Darwin existed in 150 years ago. Namely, we have a plausible explanation of how a universe could precisely come from nothing. If you ask what would be the characteristics of the universe that came from nothing by natural laws, it would be precisely the characteristics of the universe we observe. And it didn't have to be that way. It could have been another way. And by nothing, and my opponents will say that by nothing, I'm not talking about nothing, but I'm talking about nothing. No particles, no radiation, no space, no time, and even no laws of physics. There do remain deep philosophical and scientific questions that are unanswered, but God is not required or useful to explain any of them. And therefore, to conclude, science has taught us that we don't need God to create a universe, that there's no evidence for God, that the specific scientific claims of those who require God disagree with empirical evidence, and it's irrational. Science refutes God. So clearly, you should vote for our side. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence Krauss. And that is our motion, Science Refutes God. And here to speak against the motion, Ian Hutchinson. He is a professor of nuclear science and engineering at MIT and the author of Monopolizing Knowledge, A Scientist Refutes Religion Denying Reason Destroying Scientism.
Thank you for the opportunity to be with you tonight and to explain why science does not refute God. The God I'm going to discuss is the God of Christianity, because I'm a follower of Jesus. But my side's job is not to convince you of the truth of Christianity, although I think it is true. Our job is just to show that Christianity's God is not refuted by science. To establish the motion, what our opponents have to do is to show that some central tenet of what Christians believe about God is impossible, or at least highly implausible, in the light of science. And that's a tall order. But let me dispense with a couple of the most plausible-sounding arguments. I'll illustrate one common argument from the writing of an MIT colleague, Alan Lightman, who wrote, "The central doctrine of science is the view that the laws of nature are inviolable. Science and God are compatible as long as the latter, God, is content to stand on the sidelines once the universe has begun." So the question is, how do I answer Alan Lightman? It's straightforward. The presumption that the laws of nature are inviolable is just not a doctrine of science. Science's method and its program is to describe the universe insofar as it is repeatable and follows universal laws. But science hasn't got the slightest need to extrapolate that method and program into a presumption that everything that happens must be so describable. And the majority of the scientific heroes of history did not make that presumption. Great scientists like those that were recited before, Newton, Boyle, Dalton, Maxwell, were Christian believers who saw their science as compatible with a God who is active in the world and on occasions works miracles that go beyond the laws that they were discovering.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
A second frequent critique of belief in God is that it is based on irrational faith rather than evidence. Belief in God is often highly rational. The universities that were established between, say, the 14th and the 18th centuries were places of explicitly religious rationality and learning. But what the critics mean, I think, is they're saying there's no scientific evidence for God. Actually, there are some things we've learned about the universe through science that are highly suggestive of a creator. But for the sake of argument, suppose that the scientific evidence for God were non-existent. Would that mean that science refutes God? Not at all. There's no scientific way to prove that Caesar crossed the Rubicon. There's no scientific way to judge the justice of a verdict. There isn't even a scientific way to detect a true thought. But all of these things are real cognitive questions whose answers are important and often indisputable. And questions about God are usually of the same type, not scientific. If science in its endeavors fails to detect God, so what? Thoughtful Christians don't believe that God is a natural phenomenon to be established by scientific investigation. Science, for all of its power, is utterly incompetent to refute God.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared US, Oxford-style debating on America's shores. Stay with us. And a reminder of what's going on, we are halfway through the opening round of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan. We have four debaters, two teams of two, arguing it out over this motion, science refutes God. You have heard two of the speakers so far, and now on to the third, Michael Shermer. He is the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine, a monthly columnist for Scientific American, and the author of The Believing Brain. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Shermer.
All cultures everywhere in the world have created God beliefs, gods with these intentional agents. For tonight, I want to ask, what's more likely, that our opponents here happen to pick the right God and the right religion among all the about 10,000 different religions and about 1,000 different gods that humans have constructed socially, anthropologically, psychologically in the last 10,000 years? 10,000 different religions, 1,000 different gods. Our opponents agree with us that 999 of those gods are false gods. They are atheists like we are atheists. What I'm asking you to do is just go one God further with us. So here's what happened. About 5,000 to 7,000 years ago, these small bands of hunter-gatherers began to coalesce into chiefdoms and states. As long as the numbers are small, informal means of behavior control and moral enforcement operate quite well. As soon as the numbers are too large for these informal means, shunning, making people feel guilty, making them feel embarrassed for their bad behavior, as soon as the populations are big, there's too much opportunity for free riding and for cheating the system and taking advantage of it and getting away with it. So two institutions evolved: government to set up a set of rules and everybody gets a copy, and religion, in case you think you got away with it, you didn't, because there's an eye in the sky that knows all and sees all and keeps track of this. Now, what's happened in the last several centuries since the Enlightenment, in addition to the trajectory that Professor Krauss outlined for you, science displacing religion as the primary means of explaining how the world works, something else has also happened. We've slowly but ineluctably replaced religion as the primary source of our morals and came up with the clever idea that you actually have to have a reason why you have certain moral principles and we're going to write certain laws. You actually have to give evidence for why you think this is a good law or a bad law or a good moral principle or a bad moral principle. And so again, what's more likely, that one of them happens to be the one true religion and the one true God and all those others that have been constructed are false gods, or that, as we can clearly see, this is what people do to get along. They construct religions, they construct moral systems, and so on. We now know that we can do this without gods. In fact, we do it quite well without gods. Northern European countries do just fine with much lower rates of religiosity than we have. I want to finish with just one comment on the resurrection, since Ian brought that up. Leaving aside the scientific evidence for this, just think about what it is that is being said here. God, they are monotheists. They believe that there's just one God, and that Jesus is God manifest on earth, and he is your Savior, and you accept him for redeeming us for sins we never committed. Somebody else in the past committed them. So as I understand this, God sacrifices himself to himself to save us from himself. If that sounds as incomprehensible to you as it does to me, I urge you to vote for our side. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Shermer. And our motion is science refutes God. And now our final debater speaking against this motion, Dinesh D'Souza. He is the best-selling author of many books, including What's So Great About Christianity. He is also the director of the documentary 2016, Obama's America, and a former policy analyst in the Reagan White House. Ladies and gentlemen, Dinesh D'Souza.
How would one go about establishing the idea that science refutes God? On the face of it, this is such an odd and difficult and preposterous enterprise. Why? Because actually the questions to which God is the answer are really fundamentally not scientific questions. Here's what I mean. Here we are, as human beings, we're thrown into the world. And we can't help, if we're curious, if we're thoughtful, to say, why is there a universe? What's our purpose? What are we doing here? What's going to come after? We're going to die, but what next? Now I ask you, what are the scientific answers to those questions? The answers are, from science, don't have a clue, don't have a clue, and don't have a clue. Why? Because none of those questions is amenable to being decided empirically. So because science is in no position to refute God, what we get from the other side is pop psychology. It's an effort to explain why people believe instead of providing any kind of a real refutation. The reality is, and we keep hearing a lot about Darwin, because the last good argument against God came out in the 1850s. Science has made a whole bunch of discoveries since then, but they point in the opposite direction. When the discovery of the Big Bang came, this, by the way, was at a time when most scientists believed the universe was eternal. The steady-state universe was the prevailing doctrine of American and Western science. So it came as a shock that the universe had a beginning. Why? Because in a way, it wasn't just that matter had a beginning, but space and time also had a beginning. In other words, this was something that the ancient Hebrews had said thousands of years ago, and without conducting a single scientific experiment. By the way, that's almost identical to what Lawrence Krauss said. First, there was nothing, no particles, no energy, no laws, and then there was a universe. Completely consistent with what Christians believe. And the astounding fact is that 2,000 years later, modern science, after climbing round and round the mountain, has arrived at the top only to find a bunch of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. Now, the fine-tuned universe has become now a tremendous embarrassment to atheism. Why? Because ultimately it shows that the laws and constants of nature are fine-tuned, not only for the existence of life, but specifically for human life. I want to note that this is an argument completely immune to Darwinian attack. Let's remember that evolution, powerful theory as it is not a theory of life. It's not about the origin of life. It's simply about how life form A gave rise to life form B. And the fact is that there have to be certain conditions that are necessary for evolution to take place. In other words, the fine-tuned universe is a precondition of Darwinian evolution itself. We are living at a time when religious believers do not need to be afraid of science. They should, as I do, embrace science and welcome science, because correctly understood, far from pointing away from God, science thrillingly points to God. Thank you.
Thank you, Dinesh D'Souza. And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where the motion is science refutes God. Now we go on to round two, where the debaters address each other directly and also take questions from you in the audience and from me. We have two teams of two. They are arguing out this motion, science refutes God. Lawrence Krauss and Michael Shermer are arguing for the motion. And they are, number one, they're saying they are not arguing that science disproves God, but that science makes the possibility, the existence of God, very, very unlikely. They also say that God is a human creation, that this is established in history, psychology, anthropology, and that in the past, God was the answer to a question that science has now answered more and more successfully. The team arguing against the motion, Dinesh D'Souza and Ian Hutchinson, are making the argument that belief in God, number one, is very rational. Number two, that there is evidence for the existence of God. It's just not evidence that one would call scientific. So we're going to take questions from you and from me, but I want to start.
Yeah. It's 50 billion here. Me and my boy Felonious Axe going to take the lyre down to G-Dog's crib in Crawford. And Dickie and Cola gonna bring some freaks too. Gonna have a blast. The billionaires are here with men of the hour. We're sitting pretty chillin' in the hall of power. We're buying access, seeing progress, and making a mess of the political process. Oh yes, our cheese is buying us a whole lot of leverage. When we arrive, they serve us a nice cool beverage. With the final word on the pending legislation. Please don't play your hate in all the regulating of all corporations and our industry. We're the foxes with the platinum set of hen house keys. Buying $1 billion favors for a couple of G's. We got money, currency, steady blowing in the breeze. We're just living our American dream. The CEOs are playing for the Bush-Cheney team. My president, he got you all scared. The billionaires are coming, so you better beware. Step out our stretch hummers and everybody stands. Parents, block up your daughters, here come the billionaire.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We're dining on pheasant, we're dining on grouse. Yeah, the billionaires are in the house. Cheney worked for us as Halliburton's chief exec. Each year we're cutting dick another $1 million check. These federal contracts just land in our lap. We keep getting away with all the craziest crap. We're ripping off the Pentagon for soldiers' meals. We brought Nigerian officials making energy deals. We overcharge America, sell Iraq, Kuwaiti oil. But this sticks up for us, he's very loyal. You wanna win a game, you gotta make the rules. We stole an election right in front of you fools. Justice Scalia, I know you got my back. Let's forget about Iraq and shoot birds that go quack. We bought a vice president who totally cares. Kids, get out the way, here come the billionaires.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We'll smack you around like an abusive spouse. Yeah, the billionaires are
so just chill. We had a hand in drafting the energy bill. Drug company pockets must be lying. So Medicare reform was made with us in mind. Colin Powell's son gave us the royal jewels when he relaxed on the media ownership rules. We say Bush is our president. You know we ain't kidding. He's taking our money and doing our bidding. Everybody bow to the king. When it's all over, we'll own everything. Our terror system got you on your knees while we're picking your pockets and snatching your cheese. We got the USA by its curly short hair, so look out below, here come the billionaire.
The billionaires are in the house,
billionaires. The billionaires are in the White House. We're sucking your blood like a bloated louse. Yeah, the billionaires are in the house. Enron is in the house.
In the White House.
Halliburton is in the house.
In the White House.
Fox News Corp is in the house.
In the White House.
In the house.
In the White House.
Citigroup is in the house.
In the White House.
ExxonMobil is in the house.
In the White House.
Philip Morris is in the house.
In the White House.
Monsanto is in the house.
In the White House.
This administration's preoccupation is directing the nation on wealth consolidation. All those taxes that you pay, they'll be coming our way upon a platinum tray, so don't play. No one can stop us, no one dares. Run for the hills, here come the billionaire. Run for the hills, here come the billionaire. Here come the billionaire.
And now for something completely different.